folks. Welcome to A Different Direction. We cover stories of the strange, document the weird, stuff like that. I'm Dave.
I'm Diana.
And today we're talking about episode 23 of The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., Wild Card. Before we start, you can find us on Twitter at Different Direction Pod, or you can email us at differentdirection@tgifrk.com. No messages from the freaks on the message board this week. The freaks are all out getting some sun, I guess. They're all busy. It's warm. Nobody's riding.
It depends where you are.
Or it's cold. Everybody's...
It could be... We don't know anything about anything.
Sheltering from the cold. I don't know.
Sheltering?
Yeah. As in being inside from the cold? That's what you do when there's cold?
Oh, I thought you meant like a cave situation.
No, I just mean being in shelter.
Oh, right. I mean, is a cave not a shelter?
I mean...
Is it not a shelter until you put a chandelier up?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So, writers on this episode, there's two of them. We got Brad Kern, who prior to this wrote Deep in the Heart of Dixie, and AKA Kansas. And John Wirth, who prior to this wrote Deep in the Heart of Dixie, and Mail Order Brides. So, sticking with some... People who write about Dixie Cousins and Mail Order Brides, which is not a Dixie Cousins episode, but still. Director of this episode was Larry Shaw. This is the only episode of this show that he did. He did a lot of TV, both before and after this. The most notable thing I had written down, mostly because when I do this, people have like huge careers. I just try to go through and find something that stands out to me specifically, which might not be the most interesting thing.
So they could have directed like Titanic and you're like, hey, you remember that one episode of Saved by the Bell? This person directed that.
Look, if I found out that somebody who directed one of these shows also did that one episode of Saved by the Bell,
mm-hmm.
You know the one. The one episode of Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, where Screech gets locked in the fridge.
Okay, if somebody actually was actually also the director of that Punky Brewster, yes, I absolutely would be very excited about that. But sometimes I just see, like, this is a thing where I'm like, that's the thing this person directed the most. So that's what I'll reference. I don't know. This person directed 50 episodes of Desperate Housewives.
I forgot that was a show.
I know. I kind of did too. But yeah, directed a lot of TV. But that's the one where it's like the most, like the biggest chunk of their career that stands out.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the directors on the show or writers or whatever don't have anything where they did like 50 episodes
mm-hmm.
of it. So, I thought it was a lot when that one person did like 16 episodes of Parker Lewis Can't Lose, which also this person directed some of.
Interesting.
And was even in a documentary about Parker Lewis Can't Lose, which I've never seen. I've only ever heard that as just a thing people reference. I have never seen a single episode of that show.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like it's a thing people know about and talk about that I've just... never seen before.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
I know. You didn't last time either. I'm just saying.
I still don't. I'm not in the Orb universe where everyone knows that show.
Uh-huh. Look, in a real, like, Orb universe where we'd had advances in humanity, Briscoe County Jr. would still be on the air. I'm just saying. Like,
yeah, because they're telling the truth.
Right. Yes. Okay, so should I recap then?
Didn't know you took off your cap. Trying some new things out.
Yeah, where's your cap?
I'm wearing headphones and can't put the cap on.
That's true. It'd be very uncomfortable. Anyway, I'm going to do the recap now. We start on Briscoe and Bowler kind of guarding a stagecoach, but mostly just running through the show's yearbook superlatives to remind us of the fun times we had together and let us know that they hope we never change.
Yep.
In what might be their worst showing ever as Old West heroes, they get robbed just so hard, you guys. Like, I'm kind of embarrassed for them. The closest they get to stopping the bad guys is when Bowler almost shoots them, but Briscoe stops him because he realizes that it's obviously Dixie. Which is weird, because... Dixie's in Montana? Like, they're not avoiding each other or anything, just like she's in Montana. She's, like, super busy. That's the only thing that's going on between them. Anyway, so they continue on to where they were headed, which is Reno, which is all neon lights and casinos, including Dolly Cousins Casino. Or at least that's what it's called, but when they get inside, it turns out it's not actually hers anymore. It belongs to a mafia Elvis, also known as Dino. So Briscoe and Buller go talk to Dolly, tell Dino to beat it, and Dolly's like, I don't see Dixie. I don't know what you're talking about. She's definitely not here. She's nowhere to be found. I haven't seen her at all, for sure. And then immediately rides off to where Dixie's hiding, and they obviously follow her because, yeah, obviously she knows where Dixie is. Things between Briscoe and Dixie are awkward. We find out the money belonged to Dino's family, the Tattaglia crime family, and that it was being sent to Dino as part of his whole thing where he's just doing, like, crimes to take over a bunch of casinos in Reno. So they steal the money to use in a poker game against Dino to get Dolly's casino back. I really wish the show would stop using the same letters for everybody's name. Dino and Dixie and Dolly, and it makes it very hard for me to get the right names when I'm saying everything. And for some reason, for half of my notes, I wrote Daisy for Dixie. Don't know why I did that. Anyway, so they're going to play a poker game against Dino to win the casino back, but they're not going to play it. They've got a ringer. It's Whip Morgan. Remember Whip Morgan? Some of you may not. He was the guy from the episode with actual Elvis. He was the kid that wanted to kill the main criminal because he was actually his dad. It was that whole thing. He's from that episode. Anyway, so go to the poker game, and he's winning. And he convinces Dino to put in a thing saying he gets to own the casino. And Whip wins with just astronomical, impossible odds. And now he owns a casino. Yay! Except Dino's brother shows up very shortly after and steals the thing back from Whip. Obviously, none of that worked. That was never going to work the first time. Back to Briscoe and Buller, and also Socrates, because his contract says he has to be in the episode. Socrates is with the stagecoach.
I like Socrates in this episode.
Yeah, but
may I interject?
That's fair. Logically, it doesn't make sense for him to be here.
This is, I know, but it makes way more sense than some other times.
I agree. That does not make this one make more sense. I also think the same thing about some of the other episodes.
Okay.
Anyway, Socrates is with some stagecoach cops who are trying to find out who robbed that stagecoach. And they're trying to figure it out by just grabbing ladies' hands, because they have one bit of evidence, I guess. Luckily, they don't see Dixie, and so they don't figure out it was her. Meanwhile, they find out what happened with Whip, so they go over there, and Briscoe has to immediately come up with a new plan, and he sends Dixie and Whip back to the cabin where Dixie was staying, because the cops are looking for her. So Briscoe has a new plan. He and Dolly and everyone are gonna bust their way into an abandoned club and fix it up faster than an episode of Kitchen Nightmares. in an attempt to get it to be so successful that the Tattaglia brothers try to steal it, so then they have a reason to arrest them. And it's a perfect plan, because apparently all you need is women dealing cards in your casino, and literally no one else will ever go to any other casino ever. Every other casino in town is completely empty, because this one's got women dealing the cards. Now, Joey and Dino are in trouble because their dad's going to be real mad. And he's there. Enzio, their dad, is there. And he's real mad. He's showing how mad he is by doing a very tasteful Godfather impression. At Dolly's new casino, they do a single night of work. At the end of the night, it's going super well. And Dolly's trying real hard to get Briscoe out of his chaps. But it's just not happening. And that's when all the Tattaglias show up, and Enzio's like, look, it's cool. We can all be in this town together, even though we have literally zero customers because you're the only one with women dealers. And here's this champagne. And they leave, and immediately someone starts shooting at the champagne. And they're like, why are they shooting at the champagne? That's probably nitro. And they run out. And sure enough, the whole place explodes. But they catch Dino red-handed. They take him in. But there's all kinds of other gunmen. And they get trapped in the sheriff's office overnight. And then they just spend the night there. Just hanging out in the sheriff's office with gunmen outside. Then Enzio wants to talk. Outside. Seems like a trap, but he just wants to settle things without violence. He wants to have one more poker game. Whip versus Joey. He was against Dino last time, this time against Joey. And he's like, I promise you, I'm sick of people dying. No more dying. No more dying. No more violence. No violence. And he walks off, and Joey's like, hey, Pop, what if we do a violence? And he's like, don't do a violence. And as soon as his Pop's out of earshot, he's like, cool, I'm going to do a violence. So, Briscoe agrees to the game. He goes to get Whip, and that's where he finds out that Whip's only ever lost once at poker, and that was to Joey. And he figures it out because Whip's got a tell with his eyebrow. He has a little thing with his eyebrow, and Briscoe's like, you're obviously lying. But anyway, he tells him that. He's like, hey, look out for your eyebrow thing. Now let's go play the game. So they go to play the game. Meanwhile, the stagecoach cops go and find Dixie and arrest her, except they're not really cops. They are working for Dino, and they bust Dino out of the sheriff's office, bring Dixie and Dino to the family's house, and get ready for them to do a murder on Dixie. The game happens. Dolly runs in and tells Briscoe about what's going on. Briscoe runs off. Switches places with a stuntman. That stuntman crashes through a window on Comet. Then they switch places again real quick. Briscoe beats everybody up, and they save Dixie. Whip wins the game by pretending to use his tell, because no one ever does that, and Joey falls for it immediately. Joey tries to shoot his way out, fails, because nobody can ever shoot anyone in this except for Bly that one time, and it got reversed anyway. And then, yay, they win the casino, everybody's saved, Joey and Dino are going to prison, that's it, the day is saved. Hooray! Oh, and Dixie and Briscoe stop being awkward and have what I would argue is one of their more natural-looking kisses in this entire show.
Hard to disagree.
Compared to some of the others.
No chemistry between these two at all.
I knew we were going to talk about this a bunch. I'm just saying, I think it's better than some of their previous ones. That's all. Anyway, that's the end of the recap.
Just because the producers or whatever cast Dixie as a actor, they clearly just, I wouldn't say they don't like each other, but it feels like they don't like each other. And also, I feel like she's thinking about being this character.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I wonder, she maybe doesn't have this accent or way of talking.
That's the one thing that I think it is.
And I think, like, because of that,
she's
tense in a way that just the body, like, her body seems weird. Like, I mean, it's not weird. Do you know what I mean? Like, she doesn't seem to be comfortable in the kisses because they seem so, like, staged.
Yeah, right.
Which might be just intentional, but we've seen the other kisses, the good kisses, and they weren't like that.
Right. So all I'm saying is, I think if you went look, if you watched this,
no,
and then
I agree.
Went back and watch them. Okay. So that's all I'm saying. Is compared to the previous ones.
Also, can we just say the patriarchy and like heteronormative standards or something? Because your whole thing with the casino being, I didn't even think about how, I just figured everyone just went because it's the new casino.
No, they literally say, like, that's Dolly's idea. We'll get people in here because I'll have some of, as they put it, I'll have some of my girls deal the cards.
I thought somebody else gave her that idea.
No, I think, I'm pretty sure Dolly says it.
Oh, okay.
But she's like, yeah, because clearly she's like close with the women that are still working at Dolly's casino.
Uh-huh.
Which, when I say Dolly's casino, I'm referring to the casino that Dolly does not own that's still called Dolly's Casino. She's still clearly close with the women that worked there.
Well, I don't okay. There's too much to unpack in this episode. Uh-huh. I'm trying in my mind to figure out where I'm going to start.
Okay.
So Dino, when we meet that character, and he's like, I'm a bad guy. Uh-huh. And it's like, I own this casino, so that means I own you.
Oh, yeah.
And what?
Yeah.
And also, how did he get the casino?
How does he take it
from Dolly? Was she... It would not surprise me if they were together at some point and then at some and use that against her.
My guess is like some kind of shady like thing where he offers her a loan with the thing on collateral, but then does a thing where so she can't pay it, she has to give it to him or some other like. There's a lot of storylines like that.
What's Collateral? Isn't that a Harrison Ford movie? Or is that Tom Cruise?
I believe that one is actually Mel Gibson.
I don't know. It's just a man with a face.
Well, amusingly, in this case, it's kind of the man without a face.
So it was Clint Eastwood?
What?
That's a man without a name.
That's a man without a name, yes. Collateral is basically a thing where you get like a loan or something, and when you put something up as collateral, the idea is that like if you don't pay this back,
is that what a mortgage is?
In a lot of cases, the house is the collateral on a mortgage. So if you don't pay the mortgage, the bank ends up owning the house. That's actually why after the housing crisis, banks ended up owning a bunch of houses. The 2008. The banks ended up owning a bunch of houses that nobody could buy because they weren't worth anything because nobody had any money because of the housing crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But because so many mortgages defaulted, the banks ended up owning just a bunch of houses.
What about those flippers? The sales went wild for those houses. Hey, I'm going to get this. I'm going to put my flippers all over it and then sell for a lot. So everyone loves seals.
Yep.
And I can't blame him. It was a good idea. Go seals.
Agreed.
They're really cute. Really cute. They flipped my house. It's cute little cute seals. Also, I was trying to conjure up different Joey catchphrases.
Uh-huh.
One, this Joey doesn't have a catchphrase, which is ridiculous considering when your name is Joey, you need one.
Yep.
So.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think of any. But I feel like this character should have one.
I agree. They instead had him do the, like, Biff Tannen, I don't know how idioms work thing, where he's like, you and your sister, like, two peas in a cob.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which they only did once, so it's like, it doesn't feel like a character trait, it just feels like a one mistake. That, yeah, it's dumb, but, like, it's not like that's
no,
his thing.
No, I feel like his thing was just wearing that shirt with the pointy collar. I feel like they're wearing leisure suits, but they were cowboys.
Right. Yeah.
But they were also the mob.
Right.
I feel like this was heavily just ripped off of The Godfather.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that they absolutely fully intentional because...
I know it was fully intentional. I just... Why? That already exists. Why? We don't need to keep seeing it over and over again. I don't...
Why was Sheriff Elvis?
Because Elvis is cool.
Okay. Well, that's why there's The Godfather. Which, by the way, like...
Okay, this is what it feels like to me. A bunch of film bros that like films and like referencing things decided to put some references in there for other people that like the same thing they do.
Yes.
Instead of just making an interesting episode.
Maybe they
that's wholly original.
That those references are what makes it an interesting episode.
Well, that's because it's on Fox. That is where The Simpsons started, and The Simpsons is just one big parody.
Uh-huh.
And
extremely popular, because people like it, and that's why...
Well, okay, fine. You don't have to... Look. I'm just saying. You don't have to bring us up in this.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so, I don't know how to do a Godfather reference.
So, to get specific with this, in this, there is the sort of like big goon that they have, the family has, is named Luca, and they're the Tattaglias. The Tattaglias in The Godfather, I guess. Spoiler for The Godfather in the next few seconds. The Tattaglias kill the Corleone's, like, enforcer, Luca. Luca Brasi is the enforcer for the main family in The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And he's killed by the Tattaglias.
Mm-hmm.
So, that, like, this is, like... Not just like a mob thing. These are direct references to that.
Yeah,
like,
I figured. But as a person that has never seen that movie,
mm-hmm.
this episode draws way too heavily on that. That's kind of part of what would make this episode funny is mm-hmm. understanding these references.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't understand them, you're kind of like left with just like. This boring shell of an episode. And I want to say, like, Bowler and Briscoe are as funny as ever, mm-hmm. and everyone's good. Just everything with the mobsters is related to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just caricatures of a thing that already exists. So mm-hmm. you kind of are able to guess what's going to happen, right?
I would say not necessarily, because, like,
I mean, I don't know. I'm asking.
Yeah, I'm going to say not necessarily. Because here's the thing. I absolutely thought that the way it was going to go, the way it was set up, is like once the father shows up, who again, I got to say, like, a lot of people think they have a Brando as the Godfather impression and they don't have one, and I appreciate that this guy who's obviously supposed to be him isn't doing the full-on like caricature of Brando. Like, he's not doing that. He's just like in that role, but he's not doing that, which like most people, like, as opposed to the Elvis guy, who's just, like, how many very obvious, like, bad Elvis things, like, impression things can I do?
But being bad at Elvis impressions is kind of funny.
Okay. And it can be funny to do bad impressions of The Godfather, too. But I'm just saying that, like, I appreciated that, like, that wasn't what this guy's deal was. Like, he wasn't...
Yeah, this person seemed more like he was a coach for the Yankees or something.
Right. But... when he shows up and, like, the brothers are all worried about what's going to happen when he shows up, and he's clearly annoyed that he's put so much money into this thing and everything.
Uh-huh. I don't know why Joey would be annoyed when he thinks that the dad has gone soft or whatever.
Well, because he thinks, just like, violence is the way to do it. But what I'm saying is that, like, you, when all that happens, when he shows up and all that happens... if you were going to guess the direction of the rest of the story based on what you know about The Godfather, mm-hmm. like, you're like, oh, violence is going to happen.
Head in a bed.
Yeah. Like, violence.
Or a fish in a bed or something like that.
The Tattaglias actually send the fish.
Okay, we don't need to get in the logistics of it.
I know, but I'm saying, so... I actually really like that the intention of the father in this is not violence. He's like, I don't want any more of that. I'm done with that stuff. Like, it happened once.
But does he actually do violence in the end?
No, the sons do. And when he sees what the son did and the son gets caught, both of the sons have been caught because they both decided to do violence when he was just trying to, like... be cool.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm disappointed in you that you didn't listen to me. All you had to do was listen to me and we'd be fine. He wanted to, like, just coexist, mm-hmm. have them both have casinos, have them both just succeed together in town, and it's fine. And Dino tries to blow them up. Like, Dino blows up the casino and he gets caught, and then Joey tries to, like, shoot his way out and he gets caught, and it's like, we all could have been fine. We didn't have to do any of this. None of you had to go to prison. We could have been fine, and now you're all going to go to jail. And, like, that's not the way it would go. That's why I'm saying, like...
No, everyone gets free in the West.
Well...
I mean, not really, because Briscoe catches them all in the right, orb.
Right. So all I'm saying is, like, if you expect...
Orb cops. And they're not cops, I guess.
I mean, they're
agents.
Kind of, they're kind of cops.
Agents of.
They're kind of cops.
Okay.
Unfortunately, ACAB includes Briscoe, Bowler, and the Mandalorian. They're all cops.
The Mandalorian's a cop?
I mean, he's a bounty hunter.
Are bounty hunters really cops, though?
I mean, often yeah, they work
guess,
for the cops.
I guess, like, they're bringing a bad guy to a sheriff
yeah.
to get money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're cops. Like.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah, they're cops.
Womp womp. End of episode. Okay. I ruined your train of thought because I sang a song.
No, it's fine. I think it was at the end of, like, well beyond the end of what
okay,
I
wanted to
say.
Okay, I need to talk about the Dusters.
Yeah, okay.
One.
Stagecoach cops, which I never called Dusters in the recap, so that's what you mean.
Yes. Well, mm-hmm. they called them the Fremont Stage Cops or something
right.
like that.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, who are those people?
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, why is Socrates with those people?
Right.
I guess it makes sense later on, like,
yeah.
like once he says why he's there, but then yeah. also... Did you bring up how Socrates was like, this was a whole setup and he was like, fell for like, he was getting this
know.
Money sent from like Governor Jensen?
Well, Governor Jensen vouched for it, but Governor Jensen is corrupt, which is
well,
why
yeah,
he vouched
cause he
for it.
Well, yeah, because he has three counts of bribery, but then mm-hmm. it's very strange. I guess maybe because he's a lawyer, but he uh-huh. says that
indicted, but not convicted.
Yes, yeah. yes, yes.
Yeah. Which means, like, they said it was maybe a crime, but, like, there was never any conviction. So, like, legally, he didn't necessarily do anything.
And
but also, you know he did.
Like, yeah. Like, no, I think that's why they're
yeah,
saying it.
Yeah. When a governor gets indicted on three counts of bribery but doesn't get convicted,
something...
he definitely got bribed.
Yeah.
No question.
Sometimes people do things and there's not enough evidence.
Yep.
Oh, when they get, after, like, Whip Morgan wins the mm-hmm. thing and is in the hotel
yep.
celebrating, I guess, and then
As I wrote it, he's getting crazy with the cheese whiz.
I enjoy how when they go with, like, to go and talk to him, and they're like, mm-hmm. oh, they let you your drawer. You
oh,
know,
yeah,
they left
he's...
a drawer.
Yep. Yeah, because he's nude, but then when Briscoe and everyone go in, he, like, pulls some drawers to hide himself. And, yeah, I loved Dixie being like, at least they left you your drawers.
Is that who said it, or did Bowler say
Dixie
it?
Dixie said it. Yeah, later...
Bowler says, like, your drawer's slipping?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But Dixie's the one who says the thing, like, at least they left you your drawers. And
yeah.
I was like, that's a good line.
So, what do you think about this weird, flirty Whip and Dixie and Dolly and Briscoe thing.
Okay. Well, there's three sort of connections,
yes.
connections to discuss there. So I think Whip is just kind of a young man at being around just overtly sexual Dixie and is just like, yes to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just genuine, honest. He just wants some Dixie.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dixie flirting back is entirely to see how Briscoe's going to react, because she honestly...
Briscoe is not there when she's taking her nude pond swim.
I think Dixie just likes swimming and is comfortable with a nude swim. And the thing is, like, what's very clear to me is, like, Dixie does not have boundaries around, like, keeping people away. She's just like, I'll just be nude. I'm cool. I enjoy doing stuff. And, like, we'll see what happens.
But I
if
feel
somebody
like...
wants to see me, I don't care.
The problem with that is, I'd believe you if this wasn't taught, like, if this wasn't entirely the male gaze happening here.
Here's the thing is...
Because we're literally seeing it from, like, what Whip is looking.
Yeah.
So I feel like you're literally seeing it from him.
Yes. I think for Dixie, letting him... kind of get some glimpses and whatever is a way to get him to be extra flirtatious, which is how she's going to see finally how Briscoe is actually going to react.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's doing that to get Whip.
But that's not an okay way of getting anyone's reaction.
I also think Briscoe's way of not the fact that Briscoe clearly is not willing to overtly show how he feels, and maybe he doesn't even it's possible his sense of like feeling like he needs to be loyal to what he's doing and not think about that right now and whatever is the reason.
No, that's self-sabotage.
Yeah, no, I agree. I fully agree, but I think by getting Whip interested enough to be very overtly flirtatious and even say something to Briscoe eventually is the way that Dixie knows will either show that Briscoe is legitimately not into her or will finally step forward and say that he is.
Mm.
Because Briscoe doesn't know how to talk about his feelings in that way.
Well, what's interesting to me is that they're in that tense situation, and then Whip says at the just the worst time possible, really.
Uh-huh. Hey, he's a dumb boy.
Hey, I'm a dumb boy.
Uh-huh.
Is Dixie seeing anyone? How about asking Dixie?
Uh-huh.
And then two.
He's a dumb boy.
Two. No, that's how everyone does it.
Yeah, because he's dumb. Everyone's dumb.
No, it's not dumb. It's our society is dumb.
Yeah.
And then, so... But then Briscoe just, like, really slaps him. It's just like, she's my girl! And, like, if it comes, like, a breakdown from a Korn song or something, he's incredibly possessive. I was like, we don't... Okay. No, thank you.
Right. So... I'm trying to be very careful about how the way that I word this, because I'm not trying to support, honestly, any of what's actually happening in this.
I know that those words are not meaning, but that, like, I do feel like I actually feel like Whip is actually asking Briscoe, like, hey, do you have feelings for Dixie? Because I'm going for it, man.
I don't think Whip has a clue that Briscoe might be the one, because he's so awkward. Like, it's so awkward between Briscoe and Dixie in this episode. I don't think Whip has a clue Briscoe might be the one that she's into. I think Whip legitimately thinks Briscoe might know if Dixie's into some other guy, not Briscoe. Like, I don't think Whip has any idea. And I think this is all Dixie's way of forcing Briscoe to finally just step up and say something, say what he actually feels and thinks, which is all part of like a really messed up whole dynamic between them and just men in general and relationships. It's a whole problem, like a whole huge problem. Like, so I'm not in any way supporting anything with any of this.
I once saw Dave Wright go in a rhino fight for me. He like fought what is a Rocksteady?
I legitimately never remember which one is Bebop and which one's Rocksteady.
I thought it was like Rhinoceros, so it's R for Rocksteady.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought I heard somebody else say that once, and I was like, that's how I'm going to remember it. I never confirmed it.
So. I have no reason to believe.
Let me know. Also, who's your favorite turtle? I'm going Donatello. I mean, it was Michelangelo, obviously, because, like, come on, he's a party dude. Then it became Donatello.
Yeah. You know, you would think Donatello being the tech nerd would be my favorite.
No.
But no, Michelangelo. 100%.
I know, because you're a party dude.
Such a party dude.
I know. I know, brah. Okay. I didn't talk about the dusters, really.
No. What were you going to say?
Mostly, have we heard someone be called a duster before? And also, This makes so much more sense in the Red Dead 2 thing, where the bounty hunter thing comes out, where I feel like there was a lot of dusters.
There were a lot of dusters. Like, and a lot of people in, like, dusters, yeah.
Is that bad? Is that, like, being in a duster bad?
I mean, I think a duster is just literally a way to... It's just a coat you would wear. But I think that was probably maybe more common among people doing that. But, like, people just wear dusters. I mean,
now it would be totally different than...
Well, yeah, of course.
But I don't know what the, like, historical...
I mean, maybe there was some historical thing that I'm not aware of. As far as I knew, that was just a thing that sometimes people
think
wear.
About police cars and how they've changed. Like, they definitely have certain brands of police cars.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's amusing to me to think that everyone was just driving these weird geometric shapes around. Now we're, like, in kind of, like, more curvier vehicles. But now we want to be back in that cube.
Or that you know, that new, like, Tesla truck.
What's that?
Oh, it's the worst.
It's just this big square.
It is so ugly. It is so ugly.
Is it for carrying your Teslas in?
No.
How can you even call it a Tesla that's after a person? I feel
because Tesla did stuff with electricity and it's an electric car, whatever. Anyway, moving on. We don't need to talk about Tesla anymore. Okay, sorry. If you have more you want to say about the dusters, please do.
No, I just, like, they play kind of a big part in this, but kind of not.
Yeah.
Is nitro a thing at this time?
Yeah. So,
like, because that's, like, nitroglycerin.
Yeah, that's actually what makes TNT explosive.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
Basically, TNT is...
The N.
Yes.
Yeah. Tortellini. Nitro tension. Oh, my gosh. I wrote this note about the scream that happens after the champagne blows up. And I just, and it's funny because it happens twice. Do you have any notes about that?
I don't, but I know what you're talking about. But
there was a scream that happened. And then, you know, must have been a bad vintage. It seems like such a Frasier joke to me.
It does, but it also seems exactly like the sort of one-liner that this show has all the time.
Yeah, I'm saying there's crossover.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, I did notice the scream that you're mentioning that was, like, the same scream sound effect twice.
Yeah, it's sort of like how Bly's scream stuck out to me, but I knew it was Bly. This sounded like a sound effect happening.
Right. Here's the thing.
It's supposed to be Dolly screaming,
right? It's supposed to be Dolly. But I also...
Her mouth is not moving.
No, but I also noticed it and thought the same thing and also thought it sounded familiar. And I realized, I think this scream sound effect is... It's really similar to one that's in Swords and Sandals.
Wow, that's an obscure reference.
Yeah, which anyone listening who doesn't know is like... like an early 2000s Flash game about gladiators?
Yeah, there's a Steam version now.
There is, yes. That weirdly has like a hidden reference to a Josh Ritter song. Like, it's like a singer-songwriter.
Okay,
like,
now
that's
we
in it.
You're getting even more obscure.
I know. I mean, Josh Ritter is not more obscure than Swords and Sandals.
That's true. That's true.
I'm just saying, like, I think this scream, it must be sort of a common sound effect that's available, but, like, I swear that same scream was in that game. There's, like, a few different types of screams in that.
Well,
and I
really loved making a character that could just taunt people over the edge, and that's how I'd win as a gladiator.
By just yelling at them until they died. Yep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. Well, they don't die. They get, like, scared and fall off the edge, don't they? I guess they could get frightened to
onto
death.
Onto spikes. Where they die. Anyway, this show. Let's get back to the movie. We should get back to the show. Okay, I want to talk about the first poker game that we see.
Okay.
Between Dino and Whip.
Okay.
Because a bit of a pet peeve that I have with poker games in movies and TV.
So the
first game they play, yeah.
Okay.
The one where Whip wins the casino.
Okay.
People and things about, like, poker specifically often talk about how, like, you don't win at poker by just getting the best hand. You win at poker by reading your opponent and figuring out what they're doing and the psychology of the game. Like, that's the thing with poker is about the psychology of the game. You don't always win by just having the best hand. And then in, like, movies and TV, there's always this big long standoff, and then the winner is just like the guy that had the best hand.
Mm-hmm.
And in this game, in the last hand, Dino has a straight flush jack high, which means all five cards are, like, in a row, and it's the same suit. So that's a straight flush.
Mm-hmm.
Whip wins with a straight flush king high. There is... I looked up the probabilities of getting a straight flush in any hand of poker, and it is 1 in 72,192. Which means the chances of there being two straight flushes in a game where there's only two players is 1 in 5.2 billion with a B.
Well, Whip is cheating.
But he's not.
He is.
But he's not.
He is.
But also, here's the thing. Getting a straight flush that also is higher than a jack. Of all the straight flushes you can get that are not the straight flush that Dino already had, 2/3 of them either lose or tie, which means to beat a straight flush with a jack, the chances of getting another straight flush and beating it is actually 1 in 10.4 billion. Because 2/3 of the ones that are left would lose.
Confused eyes.
So there's, like, almost, there's, like, no chance.
No, I know what you mean. I get what you're saying. I have nothing to add.
That's
it
fair.
Is TV, and this show has an orb, and maybe this is all part of Bly's plan. I don't know.
Maybe. I'm just saying, like, in a game like this, you don't win just by having the best hand. You win by getting your opponent to a point where they have to try to win with a bad hand.
One, how you win in a game of poker in a TV show is the writer says so.
I know.
So it does not matter. The cards don't matter. The points don't matter.
I'm saying it. I feel like it's important to mention that the astronomical odds of two people getting a straight flush.
Also, didn't you think that what he wrote on that piece of paper was going to be like, you stupid face or something?
But then he checked it. Whip read the paper.
No, he didn't.
Whip picked up the paper and looked at it before he accepted the
bet. No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did. He picks it up and looks at it.
Oh, like the first time? And then he changes it?
No.
After they decide to...
He writes. He says, like, that's my marker. And he's like, I'm not going to accept a marker. I want the casino. So he takes it, writes it down, writes a different thing, puts it down, and Whip looks at it before he accepts the bet.
I don't think so. Are you 100% on that?
I remember seeing... Okay, I'll find it in the episode.
Okay, because I remember watching for that. So if they did that, maybe I missed it. Maybe I blinked. Blink and you'll miss it. And I blinked and I missed it. Because I was thinking, like, why wouldn't he double check this piece of paper? Why would he trust Dino at all? I've been trying to remember what Dino does on the Flintstones.
What he does?
Yeah, like, what sounds does he make? Does he just bark?
He goes like...
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I don't know why he would make those noises. He's a dinosaur.
Some of the noises the other dinosaurs make are speaking English.
It's a living. I assumed that was being translated with my babblefish.
Could be. Okay. He does read it after the bet's over.
Oh, after the bet's over.
So there's a whole pot. There's a whole, like, the pot with the paper on top of it.
And the chili.
Right. When the hand ends, he picks up the paper, looks at it, like, flips it to look at it, and then says, like, you've got 24 hours to clear out. So you're right. He didn't read it beforehand.
Yeah.
But
I guess he looks at it.
Everybody, there's enough witnesses. That would also mean that when Joey comes in later and takes the paper, he could just be like, whatever, I have the entire town of witnesses that saw that I own the casino. I don't care. So you took a paper. Like, that should actually be how the episode, that should be the end of the episode. It should just be like,
But how did Dino get it in the first place? We don't know that.
We don't know. We just have to accept that it happened. It happened off screen.
And also,
they don't have to explain it.
I mean, they do, because none of this makes any sense is the problem.
The setup is that it happened. We don't need to know how. It happened.
I do like the name Enzio. Is that the name of the person in The Godfather?
I don't know if there's an Enzio in The Godfather. The Godfather is Vito. Vito Corleone. I don't know.
Not Vigo.
Not Vigo.
I'm Vigo.
He is Vito. He's the Godfather.
Okay, I'd watch that Godfather.
Vito Corleone, Scourge of Carpathia.
Okay. When they do the negotiation on the chairs, like...
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
What's this thing with Ricardo being a eunuch?
Oh.
I don't...
Yeah, that's just sort of a weird throwaway line.
But it must be a reference to something.
I don't know if it is.
It has to be. It's way too specific.
I feel like it's a...
It made no sense to me.
I feel like it's just supposed to... He says a lot of, like, kind of weird stuff. And I think it's supposed to be just one of those things that's just kind of weird. It might be a reference. You may be right. But that's not how I took it. But you may absolutely be right.
I think everything is a reference. If I don't get it, I'm like, it's a reference I don't get.
I feel like it's more like trying to take the sort of things that would be said by Vito Corleone and The Godfather, but then make it ridiculous.
Okay, you mean like if you yodel in the forest?
Yeah.
The yoo-hoo that you yoo-hoo will be the yoo-hoo you get back?
Yes. And I love that so much. One, I love it on its own, like the standalone thing. But two, I love that he's like, in my country, that we have a saying, and it's that, and then Briscoe's like, where are you from again? And he just blasts past, no answer, doesn't even react. Like, that is, I love that. I love the line. I love the implication of like whatever country that, because like they're clearly supposed to be Italian. Like there are so many things that are meant to be Italian. So then when he says that, it's like, wait, where are you from? Like, because he also doesn't have any sort of accent that implies him being from any other country. Like, there are so many elements of his, like, of that moment that I just love so much. It's so...
But isn't that also a reference to The Godfather?
Well, again, I think that's...
Like, they talked... They probably would have said something like that in that movie, right? Because right, they're from Italy. Saying.
Right. He's Sicilian.
Yeah.
So, that's the thing is, like, that's absolutely not a thing you would say in Sicily. But... Mm-hmm. It sounds like the sort of thing, like, those movies always have things like, oh, in my country, we would say blah, blah, blah. And that's what I'm saying. Also with the thing about his other boy being a eunuch or whatever, where I'm like, that's what I feel like that is like writing a line that has sort of like the tone and flow of something from The Godfather, while also being really silly and not a thing that they would ever say.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I think that is.
Okay.
But I also, in that moment, love, because, yeah, I didn't bring this up in the recap, but I love how when Briscoe comes out to talk to Enzio, and Enzio's like, please take a seat, but it's in the middle of the street, and he's just like, where, and then like two men just come out with chairs and put them down, and then they're talking, and then suddenly they bring out a table, and then a tablecloth with a candle, and then they bring water, and that's when he's finally like, stop it with this! Like, where it's just like, what is even happening? But, like, it just keeps happening around them, sort of, and it almost doesn't affect what they're saying until he's finally just, like, gets annoyed with them. But it's like, when he says that, I thought he was annoyed with Briscoe, because Briscoe's like, why should I even trust you?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when he yells, stop it with this. But I think he's yelling about the people bringing them more and more, like, things like a table setting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's just like, I love that this just keeps escalating and nobody's acknowledging it. Nobody's doing anything about it. It's just happening in front of them. It's so silly and I really, really enjoy it for that.
I agree. A part of when I talk about Whip teaching Dixie to like shoot. But then when like Briscoe and Bowler go over there, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then maybe it's Dolly and Briscoe go over there.
All three go.
Okay. But then they were like, oh, I was just playing with Whip's gun. And then the hawk noise happens. Have you noticed? They used it as like a you did a euphemism.
They did, yes. Which, I mean, they didn't do the old, like, harmonica train noise. Like, the sexy train.
Choo-choo! Wah-wah! I don't know what that was. That was, like, Inception and Thomas the Tank Engine. We need more, like, dark children shows. Just Curious George, but it's just real deep.
Very Curious George.
But not like gross. I don't want it to be gross. I just want it to be like real. Like, you know, the man in the yellow hat's getting a divorce and like All right.
Speaking of the sounds and things, another thing I noticed is like there was a lot of like I want to say clarinet music in this.
Oh.
That weirdly like this is going to be a real specific reference and it's like it sounded like watching an episode of The Critic. Like I immediately felt like I was watching The Critic and it's like I haven't watched The Critic in like 20 years. But
when did The Critic come out? Like the late 80s?
No, it was like it would have been
around this
early
time?
Mid 90s. So it would have been actually around this time because I know I remember there being like Jurassic Park references that were like timely in the first
We could make season. A Jurassic Park reference right now.
Yes, I mean, to the original, and it was like, the movie had just come out when they were doing it.
Yeah, the movie is just coming out.
the original one.
Yeah, what are you talking about? I'm talking about the original one.
Fair. Oh, that's fair. But it would have been around this time. But like, I guess it makes sense. Also, wait, was that on Fox?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe this is like literally the same composer. It could have been the same composer.
I do not think it was the same composer.
It sounded so much like
all
it.
All I wrote, I didn't write anything about clarinets. I just wrote very twangy confession. And twangy to me means not clarinets. But maybe the clarinets are going on with the twangs.
Well, no, it might have been a different part.
We might
be talking about different parts of this episode.
I was talking about the part where Whip and Briscoe beat up the guards, and then there's a twangy confession. I don't know. I don't know what my note means. And then it says Whip being gross about Dixie. But then that's when like Briscoe's like, "It's my girl. Watch out for bees." And so Joey is somehow totally fine with this, as you should be.
Wait.
Don't you think like Whip is like totally fine with Briscoe being like, "We're a thing."
Yeah.
And it's so chill, and it's almost bizarre that to me it is.
The thing is, like, weirdly, in this episode, Whip is the most mature person.
I know. Like,
it's, I mean, not I counting know. Enzio. Enzio is actually probably the most mature person here. Because he's the one person who's just sort of like, can we just be cool? Like, let's just all be cool. We're living in a world, like, I'm a mob boss living in a world where everyone shoots each other all the time. But, like, I just want to be cool. I don't want us to shoot each other. I really like that when he was like, what does that bring anybody? Expensive funerals, like, you know, cheesy music, bad casseroles. Like, it doesn't, like, there's nothing to be gained from doing that. It's bad for everybody.
No one's got a casserole since Sookie Stackhouse.
Yeah, which is, like, over 100 years after this. So it's 100 plus years of bad casseroles.
I would have taken some of those. I don't have any casseroles. I know, it's sad. I'll take your sad casseroles.
Also, I wrote down my note about the clarinet music was all the way back when they first meet Dolly.
Oh.
Like, it's really early in the episode, but it happens
a
few more.
We almost don't talk. We haven't really talked a lot about Dolly. Should we?
Well, I mean, she's important to the episode.
Is she?
She is. She's Dixie's sister. She just wants to be close with her big sister. And sometimes close with the things that her big sister has and wants. But, like, again, Whip's attempt, like blatant interest with Dixie and Dolly's attempts to flirt with Briscoe are the reason they're, like, both able to be like, oh, it turns out these sort of things that I'm trying to pretend I don't care about, it turns out I actually care about them. And I think Dolly, like, she's just trying to, like, she's partly into Briscoe because Dixie is, but also it seems like Dixie's trying to pretend she isn't.
Dixie has made herself more than clear to Briscoe. Briscoe has basically said, I don't know.
Yeah.
And continues to say, I don't know, until now.
Yep. Look.
The only problem with this entire thing is that they're both never in the same place.
Yeah, but I think that's partly because Briscoe tries to distance himself. So she goes off and does her thing because he's trying to distance himself.
Sure.
So here's the thing. He got raised by a Marine drill instructor.
I know. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I don't want to talk, like, let's just talk about Dolly.
Okay.
I just also don't have anything to say about Dolly.
I think there isn't really a lot to say about Dolly that isn't informed by her interaction with Dixie and her attempt to kind of...
Well, they do have a sister duet at the end.
They do, yes.
I wrote that it was a sister act.
I mean, they literally called it a sister act.
Yeah, LOL.
Yep.
But also, they reference the orphanage in this, right? Because doesn't she say the other sisters? Is that why... Remember, because they were at the orphanage, right?
No, Dixie ended up at there after being abducted by the Comanches.
Yeah, but didn't the other sister do that too?
The other sister was also abducted by Comanches, but I don't know that she also ended up at the same
missionary. I thought they mentioned that.
Oh, they might have. I might have just missed it. They absolutely might have.
But maybe not.
I don't remember them talking about the missionary. They absolutely
may have. I do think that this is just like an entirely tropey, stereotypical episode of Frisco.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
That's fine. And also, I guess Bowler is just a horn dog and we didn't know.
I feel like that's a change partway through the season. I don't think he was always like that, but like, yeah, that's just become part of his character. That's just who he is now. It's part of it.
Okay, let's talk about Comet going through the window since apparently, you know, it's a stunt person.
Okay, so there's there's this big slow-mo, like, crash through these front windows, and there's a moment where, like, you know, he's just, you can see, like, fully see the person who's just crashed through the window looking down on Dino, and it's like, it's just long enough to be like, because of the slow-mo, it's just long enough to be like, that is definitely not Bruce Campbell on that horse. You can fully see his face, and it's like, no question that is not Bruce Campbell on that horse.
Okay, but the real question is, was it Comet?
I mean...
It's probably a stunt horse.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's actually, like, four horses that play Comet. And one of them is, like, the stunt horse. And...
How do you train for that?
I don't know. It's just... I think it has to do with, like, when horses are young, they all have different, like, temperaments and things. So it's like,
yeah,
they've got a trick
horse. I can tell you're going to be the one to jump through windows, little horsey.
Well, it's like you try certain things. You see how they react to certain things. And it's like,
hi, I'm going to try riding my pony through a window. I know a pony and a horse is not the same, but still.
Well, because in the in Bruce Campbell's autobiography, he talked about that because he said like there's like a trick horse and a stunt horse, and then there's the horse that he rides. So like the trick horse, you don't ride the trick horse because the trick horse doesn't really like being ridden. So he does tricks. So when he's doing like the more complicated, intricate kind of stuff that Comet does sometimes,
like opening a safe,
when he's like, you know, carefully pulling on a rope, or he's like hitting his hoof against there's a one in the first episode when he's like hitting his hoof against the rope to try and break it when they're tied to the tracks. It's like he's trained to paw at a specific area and like do it so he can be like, they can be like, do this, and he'll do that thing. He's got certain little tricks that he'll do. That's not the horse you ride all the time. But that's also not, but the horse that you ride all the time is not the horse that you ride through a window.
Mm-hmm.
Because that other horse is trained to ride fast and a lot, but not do scarier things like crash through a window.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about horse training to tell you how you end up finding out a horse can crash through a window, but yeah, it's a different horse. And it's a different Briscoe. It's just like they held on just long enough on the shot to be like, Bruce Campbell.
Okay, so if it's not Bruce, is it like, it's like Brosco, and then it's like, it's not a comet, it's like cosmic.
Yep. That's how he can fly so slowly through the window.
Yeah, he's a slow motion horse.
Have I still had my my copy of that autobiography in here, there's actually like a picture of Bruce Campbell with his stuntman there. Like, I know.
Oh, I thought you were going to say there's going to be a picture of like the horse.
I mean, there's at least one picture of one of the horses in it, but I don't remember. I don't remember which one it's supposed to be. But I mean, there's a picture of him with his stuntman, and I'm like, I can picture this guy in my head, even if I hadn't just seen him in this. Because
have you ever seen this person just walking around, just doing stunts? Like,
probably no.
Okay, when I think about a stunt person, I think about them being really clumsy, so they're constantly having to do stunts because that's their life.
Uh-huh. Which is funny because, like,
which is probably not true. You can't
be super clumsy and be a stunt person because...
I don't know. What about Spider-Man?
What about Spider-Man?
Spider-Man's a little clumsy.
Can you say that?
Depending on which one you watched, one of them may drop somebody in it.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
Drops somebody and they explode. They explode into the Green Hornet, the Green Goblin. There we go.
I love the idea that you explode into the Green Hornet.
And then
it fell so hard they turned into Bruce Lee. Oh, he played the other guy, but
great.
He was supposed to be the Green Hornet.
Green Hornet and other guy, Wasp Kid. Like, what's the other guy's name?
Oh man, now I gotta look it up.
We don't have to look it up.
We do, though.
We won't know. Okay, anything else we should talk about in this episode? Okay. They didn't sing
Kato.
Taquito?
Kato.
Wins. Okay.
What are you gonna say? They don't sing.
They don't sing that File the Claim song.
You don't do that as a sister act.
Why not?
I don't know. I just felt like a thing to say. Oh, the thing I was gonna say is, like, so they're talking about Briscoe. So it was Dolly's idea, the invention of neon lights. Dolly invented neon lights. And Briscoe's like, where'd you come up with that? And she was just like, just laying in bed one night, looking at the ceiling, and it just came to me. Neon lights. And so I looked it up, and I was like, this is a full 15 years before the, like, first public display of neon lights, which was at, like, the World's Fair in Paris in, like, 1910.
Of course it was at the World's Fair. Also,
go ahead.
Of course she didn't get credit for it.
No, what I'm saying is,
The orb. Okay.
This was huge, because she just was laying in bed one night and suddenly thought, hey, what if electricity through neon in a glass tube made light?
Why would you think that's the orb?
Because I think the idea is that the orb is just sort of like emitting, because it's supposed to like advance humanity. I think it's just sort of emitting.
How does gambling casinos?
Not the gambling, just the neon lights part.
Do neon lights advance society?
I think what I'm saying is this, it might be that, like, I think the reason why there's so many things that definitely didn't exist yet that people were able to come up with is literally just the orb sort of emitting a vague, like...
Are you making this up right now?
Yes.
Is this your thought?
This is my theory that I've just...
The orb pushes out invention-like vibes throughout the world?
Yeah, because it's trying to advance humanity.
It causes innovation?
Yes. What else? How else? Why else would... They'd be like, oh, she just out of nowhere.
Because that's how ideas work.
But you would have to know about neon gas. You would have to know that you could put, like, electricity through neon gas.
You don't tell me that she has not met Professor Wickwire? He was riding around on a rocket.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that he, like, that... she's the one who thought of neon lights.
I just assume that's a lie.
But then who came up with it? It was first in Paris 16 years later.
Okay. The orb thought of it.
I'm saying the orb is the only explanation, and I'm wondering
if... I mean, it's not the only explanation.
In the world we've been presented on this show, it's pretty much the only explanation. How do you just, out of nowhere, just laying in bed, laying in bed looking at your ceiling, and then you just think, neon lights? Because that's the explanation she gives. Is just... neon lights.
That's how everyone thinks of any idea, Dave.
No, the person who came up with neon lights was not just laying in bed and thought, hey, neon lights. They had to have been doing a thing that resulted in electricity passing through neon gas.
Okay, but think about short stories and plays and stuff. That doesn't come from anywhere. That just comes from your head.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You can come up with sci-fi nonsense and not worry about how it works. Neon lights do work. That's not a thing you're going to just magically come up with. You have to be working. It's a real...
Look, why would you not believe Dolly Cousins came up with neon lights?
I do.
Okay.
With the help of the orb.
All right. That's, I guess. I don't know why you had to make it all about the orb with Dixie Cousins. Did the orb help with the genes?
With the jeans?
Yeah, remember the jeans?
Because that was also created in Paris.
Are you sure?
Yeah. In the city of Nîmes.
Oh, yeah.
At least that's where denim came from. It's de Nîmes.
Well, I don't know. I feel like that took the wind out of me, and I lost the ability to just comprehend time or space or Dolly Cousins or Dixie Cousins. They're not even cousins or sisters. Do we know the actor that plays Dolly? They look familiar to me.
I looked her up, and she's in a bunch of stuff. She's still acting today, but, like, I don't recognize her standing out as, like, having been in, like, specific things that I'd be like, oh, that's how I know her. Like, I'm sure she was in things that I've seen. She's been in enough things, like, I'm sure, but nothing stood out for me, like, that's the reason I recognize her. But I agree that she's familiar, but I just didn't get there.
Do we think that John Bly is the most intelligent person they fought? And he doesn't count because he was from the future? Because I don't know. Is the point that people from the future are smarter than people from the past?
That is a legitimate thing. So,
I don't know.
It is a legitimate thing.
How? We can't compare it.
So that you can, actually. So...
wow, you well actually.
Sorry, I know. I apologize. So this is actually a documented thing where if you were to take the same sort of like, I know what, there's all
but
kinds
think
of flaws
about
around IQ.
Briscoe.
I know.
Outsmarted him.
Briscoe is right. So there's a, I know the concept of IQ tests are flawed, but if we just stick with the idea that like, there is some level of measurement of, like, comprehension and of just the world in general that can be measured through them, even if we accept that they are flawed. A person who would score 100 on an IQ test today, and 100 is basically average intelligence. 50% of people taking an IQ test get less than 100, 50% get above 100. So a person who gets 100 today, if they took an IQ test that was given to people 20 years ago, they're going to get above 100. If they give one that was done 100 years ago, they're going to get way above 100.
Well, I mean, that makes sense how school is just more accessible. Mm-hmm. I mean, things are more accessible in a lot of ways and still not as good as they need to be.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there is more access to things right. and education.
Right. Plus, the things you're being taught have learned from the things that people were being taught. So they've...
Seems like we've forgotten some things.
Absolutely. I'm not saying it's perfect, but...
Well, that's because it's not linear.
Right. And also, remember, when you talk about averages, the, like, to be sort of crass about it, the dumbest person today is, in theory, probably still dumber than the smartest person from 1893, even if the average is way above the average from 1893, because there's such a wide range between, like...
That's interesting.
I mean, it's also possible it's not that extreme, but you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
There are ranges.
I just feel like there's skills that we don't have anymore because we're advanced past them, but right. also would be good skills that
oh, sure,
we
yeah.
should know.
Yeah, sure,
that
yeah.
That we just don't know anymore. Like, mm-hmm. like things like sewing mm-hmm. and just like a lot of like basic things. And the reason we don't have them is because other people do them now.
Right.
So we can have time to work forever.
Well, yeah.
Just like John Bly from the future.
Yeah.
The smartest man alive.
The thing is, like, I think Bly was pretty smart. He was very smart. Bly was short-sighted.
He needed glasses?
He was arrogant in a way that made him miss things.
See, that's why I feel like you wouldn't be that way.
No, but he was also still just a jerk. He was a jerk from the future.
We wouldn't be jerks in the future.
I mean, we're already well into the future and there's a lot of jerks.
I know.
I
just don't understand why there's still jerks when we all know that everyone wins through kindness and compassion and empathy.
Oh, that is a whole deep conversation.
I know.
That'll take this a long ways, but I'm just saying, we're 130 years in the future from this.
Okay.
And people are still jerks.
I know. What else are we going to say now?
Did they name her Dolly just so that when Briscoe's being all awkward when they first meet, he could say, "Hello, Dolly"?
I don't know. I didn't even think about that.
Because, like, literally, that's like... the first thing he says when she's being all, when they first meet and she's being all flirty and he's like, "Hello, Dolly." And I'm like, is that why they named her that?
I don't know. Probably. I just assumed it's Bowler and Briscoe, Dolly and Dixie.
Yeah. 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 That's fair. Oh, also, I don't think we really said the stagecoach people ended up finding Dixie because she broke her nail. Opening the safe.
Yeah, is that like Cinderella?
They call her Cinderella, and I think it's because they were looking for the match,
mm-hmm.
the thing where it fit. And I will say, like, I think partly because I had just been watching a video about Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, in mm-hmm. which oh my god, I've forgotten the name of the woman that's like in that through most of that movie, the blonde lady. But anyway, she keeps complaining about breaking her nails, and
mm-hmm.
when they're robbing the stagecoach and Dixie clearly breaks her nail on the thing,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking, like, oh, it's that trope where, like, women complain about breaking a nail, but she doesn't end up doing that. She just kind of like hits it.
It's weird.
Like, shakes her hand and then continues what she's doing.
It hurts to break your nail.
Oh yeah,
that's why people complain about it.
Oh yeah,
It's not, people just love to hate on women.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, when that happened, she very quickly just like sort of shakes her hand and then keeps going with what she was doing. But in the moment that it happened, I was like, oh, great. We're doing that trope about women breaking their nails.
I didn't even notice that happening.
Yeah, it's very quick. But then they didn't focus on it until that became a clue. And I was like, oh, okay. It's not. She just sort of, like, was fine
mm-hmm.
with it and moved on. It only happened because it became a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually liked that because I'm like, yeah, you're going to break a nail sometimes when you got nails that long.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to happen, and it's going to hurt when you do it. But I thought that was what was about to happen. I was like, ugh, don't do this thing. Like,
also, the polish isn't chipped at all on yeah. it. It would totally
except
be chipped.
Except where it broke. Everything is still perfect.
I would assume that she would have removed the polish from her nails at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that nail polish remover would have been like then. Probably just removed the skin from you as well.
Uh-huh. Probably.
Maybe she used the orb.
Maybe.
Okay, do we
That's what that blue juice is. It's just acetone.
Okay, I don't think that Bly would still be alive if he was, like, in acetone.
Well, he's still got orb powers to protect him from the acetone.
I don't know. I mean, I think what happened was that Bly became vapor. Right? To be in the orb and then, like, leaked out? Like, did he become Bly juice? Did he become juiced?
He maybe got a little juiced.
And I feel like it was sort of like that kid from Willy Wonka that likes to be on TV.
Uh-huh. I mean, I can't explain the 2D image of him in the tube, but when he got shot, he turned into all those gold sparkles. They essentially made some Goldschlager.
Yeah.
In the orb, but that turned out to be actually John Bly.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens in that scene. And when Mike TV
right.
turns into a candy bar uh-huh. or a candy bar back into a person or something. I don't remember.
He gets transmitted his little particles into the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I said. And I think he eats a candy bar from the TV, doesn't he?
That happens before he gets transmitted.
Whatever,
they transmit
I don't remember.
A giant chocolate bar into the TV, and then they transmit a giant Mike TV into a tiny-ness TV. Bleischlager. Anyway, I just wanted to say that.
I know. Anything else?
Oh. One other little thing, a little pet peeve about poker on TV.
Okay.
When the game first starts between Joey and Whip, Joey bets like 200, and then Whip's like, see that? Double it. You're not allowed to do that. If you're going to double it, you have to do it in one move. You have to be like 400 altogether.
Yeah, but this is like five, you know, card whatever.
Five card stud.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying like, in poker, when you bet, you have to do it all at once because saying you raise is saying you see that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way to like signal to see if somebody reacts to that and then decide if you're going to raise.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not allowed to do that. You have to do it all in one move.
Maybe it doesn't matter since there are only two people in the match.
That's all the more reason because you're definitely watching that one person. So it becomes more of a trick. That's you're not allowed to do it that way.
But that's how you win the Millennium Falcon.
I'm just saying, they do that on TV all the time, and it annoys me because you're not allowed to do that. If you say, I see you, like, that's it. You called it. It's not, you can't raise now.
You can't tell me what I can't do. I give you a raise, and I give you a raise, and I give you a raise. You're welcome.
Okay, that's all. Do you have anything else you wanted to say?
Don't forget to look behind things. I think that's it.
Okay. In that case, with that, this has been episode 23 of The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. Wildcard. And this is TGIF Arcade saying, until next week, I'll be waiting for you, Brisk. A Different Direction is a TGIF Arcade production. You can contact the podcast at diffdirectionpod on Twitter or email us at differentdirection@tgifarcade.com. You can also find information about everything that TGIF Arcade produces by following us at TGIF Arcade on Twitter. Thanks for listening.